I think if I gave you some examples of some fact patterns that might allow you to understand how we determine how we're going to investigate. So if you're familiar with the Defense Contract Management Agency, maybe their inspectors have an issue such as a government equipment that is appears to be in good working order, that's marked for destruction. We would get a complaint that is alleging gross waste of government funds because they're destroying very good equipment and it's salvageable. Or we could have a complaint to management about billing work performed for one government contract when it's being billed against another government contract. We get allegations that say our work on this contract wasn't billed against the right contract. My boss told me I need to bill against this other contract. So that would be an example of one of the complaints. Or we used to have the Business Transformation Agency. It's now defunct. But they would have major contractors providing work by very, very junior folks in place of senior expert levels and that were promised in the contract. And they'd be billing at the rate for the senior official rather than the junior official. So those are some of the examples.
Gotcha. And I think that the passage of this or the inclusion of this in the NDAA last year was due in part to some testimony that you gave to Congress. What was the argument for why this was needed?
Well, I think Congress, you know, has known for many years. Since 1986, we've been applying this statute. It's been amended many times, several times. The latest amendment in 2008 gave us some additional information that, you know, imposed additional deadlines for agency head to resolve their reprisal complaints. But we were seeing that we were getting complaints from subcontractors or contractors, and they had no coverage. And so in November of 2011, Senator McCaskill's staff reached out to us and to Peg Gustafson, the Small Business Association Inspector General, and asked us to come testify. And so both Ms. Gustafson and myself testified in December 11. The result was the FY 13 NDAA that the President signed back in January.
So on subcontractors, was it that they could report, they just did not receive reprisal protection? Is that the issue?
They could report, they didn't have any protections whatsoever. So if they were dismissed from the contract because a government official said to the contractor, I don't want employee X working on this contract anymore, we could not investigate and say that was reprisal because it was the government official that said, you need to fire that person. Mm-hmm. And so now with the new provisions, that would be covered. And so, you know, one of the questions sometimes I get is, do you see an increase in the number of complaints? And I will tell you, since 2006, we have seen a steady rise. I think we were in the teens, about 16 in 2006. And last year we were at somewhere like 65 complaints. And so we anticipate receiving more complaints, whether we'll investigate them to a full investigation will be something that we'll have to determine. But we anticipate with the passage of the law and it taking effect this past July 1st that we will see an increase in the number of complaints.
For one reason, there are a lot more contractors than there are federal employees. Is that one of the facts?
That may be one fact, but there's a lot of contracts out there. And sometimes the subcontractor, as I said before, wasn't receiving any coverage. The contractor was taking action based upon input from a government official or somebody else, and now with these new provisions, we see the protections expanded. We think they're good, and we also anticipate the number of complaints will go up. And previously in the statute, if the subcontractor had to complain to a government official, many times they just complained to an internal official, and they received no coverage. Mm.
You talked about some of this when you were ticking off the provisions at the very beginning of our conversation, but let's talk a little bit more about the protections themselves. What may, you know, an employer or a manager on either the government or the contractor side not do after a complaint is made?
Well, now that the coverage has been expanded, if a government official goes to the contract management official and tells them to fire that employee, there'll be protections on them so that we can investigate that and see if whether or not it was done in reprisal for them reporting some type of wrongdoing.
As you alluded to a moment ago, there's going to be an upsurge in complaints to your office, most likely. It seems to me this is, with the fiscal situation being what it is, this is exactly the time when we want more complaints of waste and mismanagement to be coming in. At the same time, I've got to imagine your office, like everyone else, is being cut back because of sequestration, because of, I'd have to imagine, most of your workforce is going to be furloughed, too. Do you expect that to have a major impact on your ability to respond to these cases?
It may have an impact on our ability to respond. We'll have to make sure that we take each allegation as it comes in and give it the full due consideration that it requires. Make sure that it meets relevant statutes. If, in fact, there is a gross mismanagement or waste or abuse, that we make sure we take it to a full investigation. And as we work through the workforce, we'll make sure that we provide the appropriate protections to whistleblowers. And we take everything we do seriously, and we want to make sure that we provide the requisite protections to whoever makes that complaint.
Let me finish up with sort of a big picture question. I mean, can you characterize for us the sorts of benefits that you think the government gets from not substantiated necessarily, but reports by whistleblowers? And to what extent is that going to be expanded with this expanded protection?
Well, many times, you know, whistleblowers make allegations of fraud, waste, and abuse at great personal expense. I mean, it takes a lot for someone to come forward and say, I think that my contract or this is being done incorrectly. Sometimes they don't have the full story and they don't understand why management has made certain decisions. We may see an increase, as I said before, in the number of complaints that come in. We will also, continue to work with the whistleblower complainant to make sure we clarify exactly what they think is that gross fraud, waste, or abuse and mismanagement. And then as we work towards the completing the investigation, we've got to make sure that we have our facts straight and that anything that they claim is a gross mismanagement, fraud, waste, or abuse, that we have the facts to support whatever they've claimed to us or not. I mean, if the facts aren't there to support their allegation, then we'll have to go back to the complainant and say, we completed this investigation, but we didn't substantiate your allegation because we didn't prove by clear and convincing evidence that what you reported was fraud, waste, or abuse.
Mm. You said earlier that this law has been amended several times. As we sit here right now, do you see any glaring gaps in whistleblower protection right now?
Well, I will say for this one, it used to be the intelligence community had protections under the previous 2409. This amendment excludes the intelligence community. But President Obama issued the Presidential Policy Directive 19 back in October with some provisions. So there's also the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act. So I think even though the intelligence community was pulled out of this part of 2409, I think their protections are now situated correctly under the ICP, the Whistleblower Protection Act, and also PPD 19. And as we see that implemented, we'll find out for sure. So glaring gaps, not at this point. We see this as really a positive benefit. It's expanding protections, and we think hopefully it will encourage folks to come forward and blow the whistle.